I'm Lillian Vasquez with Lifestyles on KVCR. Thanks for listening. On today's show, I'll speak with Disney animator and author David Bossert. David worked his way up the Disney ladder. His work involved many Disney classics, including The Great Mouse Detective, The Little Mermaid, The Lion King, and the list goes on and on. David is not retired, but has moved on to use his pen for writing. He has written several books, all on the topic related to Disney. In 2010, he wrote his first book, Remembering Roy E. Disney. He has just completed his newest book, and it's about furniture, but not just any office furniture. It's the furniture for the Disney Studios, designed by Kem Weber. We'll talk about Kem Weber, his designs, and David's long career with Disney Studios right after the NPR newscast. This is Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. David Bossert is an artist, an animator, an author, and so much more. After 32 years with the Walt Disney Company, his resume and credentials are pretty long. His newest book is Kem Weber, Mid-Century Furniture Designs for the Walt Disney Studio. Welcome to Lifestyles.
Hi, Lillian. Thank you very much for having me.
I'm so excited to speak with you. I love everything Disney, as I know the world does. But first, I want to talk to you a little bit about your bio. What were some of the films that you worked on when you were at the Disney Company?
Oh, gosh. I worked on quite a few. The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Pocahontas, The Lion King, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas, Fantasia 2000, just to name a few.
Wow. Did you start drawing as a kid, and how did you end up at the Disney Company?
Yeah, you know, it was kind of interesting. Like most of my former colleagues at the studio, and I'm sure many artists who may be listening, I always had a passion for art. I did a lot of drawing as well as sculpture and cartooning. When I graduated high school, I started going to a state university in New York for advertising art, and I took a TV graphics class, and this is pre-computer days, but I took a TV graphics class, and it was the first time I created a piece of animation with my own artwork. And right around that same time, somebody handed me an article from the New York Times about a school in Los Angeles, California Institute of the Arts, CalArts, where they were training animators for Disney. I sent my portfolio out, and I wound up getting accepted, and I got a Disney scholarship, so I drove a Volkswagen Beetle across the United States to come to school out here in Los Angeles. And there were a lot of retired artists from the Disney Studios teaching there at the time. So I was there for 3 years, and I got my bachelor's degree. And when I came out, I worked at a small studio in Studio City doing some very early video games. And then I got hired at Disney and started working there in early 1984.
So you spend 32 years working at the Disney Company. Why did you decide to leave?
Well, you know something, it was sort of the right time. I had started writing a number of years prior to that, and I had published several books. I don't like to use the word retirement. I try not to use that. I'm listed as retired at the company, but I've been writing full-time since I left 2 years ago.
When you were packing your office after 32 years, which must have been difficult, how did you decide what to keep based on the fact that you worked at a Disney company and you would have had so many items? How did you decide what to keep?
It was very difficult, I'll tell you, and I wound up packing up. I think I had like 54 boxes of material, and I have to tell you, half that were reference books that I had in my office. While I was packing, the head of the animation studio operations came in and asked me if I'd like my desk. I had been working on my desk, which was a Kem Weber designed desk. It was built in 1939. I had been working on that desk for decades, and so I was thrilled when they gave it to me.
I bet. And then the fact, as I read in your book, they also delivered it with all your stuff.
Well, I got to tell you, these Kem Weber desks are behemoths, and they are solid foundations, and they're heavy. And I was thrilled that she had the studio movers deliver the desk and all of those boxes up to my home.
I bet. I'm speaking with David Bossert. He's an artist, an animator, and an author who spent 32 years with the Walt Disney Company. As you already indicated, you've written several books. I'm assuming most of them or all of them have been about the Disney world. How did you come to write a book about your desk furniture and Kim Weber?
Well, you know, it was very interesting. In the summer of 2017, I was working on a manuscript for a new book that's coming out in June of 2019. And that book is on the making of Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas. As I was working on that project, I was writing at my Kim Weber desk, and I kind of leaned back and put my hands behind my head to stretch a little bit. I started looking at the desk, and I had looked at it a million times, but for whatever reason, I was looking at the desk, and the question just popped into my head. I wonder if anybody has written anything about this furniture. I wound up blowing the afternoon of writing that day because I started doing research on Kim Weber. And there really wasn't anything meaningfully written about the furniture he designed for the Disney Animation Studios.
What did you share and learn about him? Who was he?
So Kim Weber is what's known as an industrial designer. He designed furniture, but he was also an architect. He was a German immigrant who came to the United States in 1914. Never went back home. He became a citizen of the United States in 1924, and he did a tremendous amount of furniture design and architectural work. He did interiors. He did stores. He became the dean of the Industrial Arts and Architecture Department at Art Center in Pasadena. That was throughout the 1930s. By 1938, early 39, Walt Disney hired him to design a brand new studio for Disney in Burbank, California. So after the huge success of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs for Disney, Walt went and bought this 51-acre piece of property in Burbank, and he had this vision of creating this utopian campus. And really, it's probably one of the first and earliest examples of a creative campus. And, you know, we hear that term mentioned frequently now with Google and Apple and other high-tech companies having creative campuses. Well, I think the Disney Studios is one of the original creative campuses.
It'd be fair to say that Walt was a forward thinker and was way ahead of his time, no doubt.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that was true with everything he did. I think he really wanted to work with people who were at the top of their fields. After the success of Snow White, there were a lot of artists and performers who gravitated to the Disney Studios and wanted to work with Walt. But I believe Kim had built up a name for himself throughout the 1930s nationally that Walt would have been aware of him. And because he was based locally, it's probably the reason why Walt hired him. The sad thing is not a lot of correspondence at all that survived, if there was any.
I'm speaking with David Bossert. He's the author of Kim Weber, Mid-Century Furniture Designs for the Walt Disney Studios. But you did find stuff, or you wouldn't have been able to put your book together, and much of his photos or archive are at UC Santa Barbara. Why UC Santa Barbara?
When Weber immigrated to the United States, he was in San Francisco and there to Santa Barbara. He lived in Los Angeles, but the latter part of his life, he moved back to Santa Barbara.
Okay.
He passed away in 1963. And afterwards, you know, all of his papers were donated to UC Santa Barbara. And it's interesting, after he completed designing the Disney Studios and designing all the furniture for the studio, that would have been 1939, 1940, he actually did a show at UC Santa Barbara, which at the time was a relatively new university.
Right.
So he did a show of all the work he had done for Disney up there.
In writing this book, because you are writing about his furniture and his design and his architect style, Who did you talk to when you were writing this book to have some of that background?
Yeah, so I actually reached out to a number of the appraisers that appear on the Antiques Roadshow on PBS.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And ultimately was put in touch with a gentleman named Peter Logri. And Peter lives in Los Angeles, and he has the Los Angeles Modern Auctions Gallery in Los Angeles, and he does annual auctions of mid-century modern furniture. So I did an extensive interview with Peter, and his views and opinions are quoted in the text of the book.
When you were writing the book also, having such resources of the men and women that you worked with, did you reach out to some of maybe the older guys that could give some insight to some of the furniture or maybe anecdotally talk about the style?
Absolutely. In fact, the furniture is so endearing to the artists that used it that everybody had their own thoughts on it and their own feelings about the furniture. One of the common themes from a lot of the folks I spoke to was the sense that the furniture itself has an aura to it. It has a soul almost. And some people knew the provenance, who had the desk before they got it. There were some fun stories and some fun reminiscing about the furniture.
When you look through the book, there's different names. I know which one I chose as my favorite, which one I really enjoyed and liked. And I like the sleekness of it. I like the organization of it. I like the lines of it. What is your desk and which one did you end up with in your new office?
So it's very interesting. I have a desk that's very rare. When I left the studio, there was only two of them that I was aware of, and I have one. It's the compact animator's desk. But the interesting thing is, for many years when I had the desk, I thought it was an assistant's desk because it was a little smaller than the animator's desk. And somebody had told me early on it was an assistant's desk, and I was very surprised to find out when I was doing all the research on the furniture that it's not the assistant's desk, which is a different style desk. There is an assistant's desk, but mine is a compact animator's desk. So that was kind of a neat thing to discover.
You know, oftentimes when the old goes out and the new comes in and the furniture's changed and it's all modernized and such, and sometimes these older pieces get put in a storage somewhere at the back of somewhere, is any of this furniture there or is this furniture still alive? What's going on with the originals?
Well, it's interesting. Over the years, the studio had some warehouse sales for employees, and so they sold off some of the desks. The furniture is scattered out into the world.
Oh, good.
And you're starting to see some of those pieces showing up in auctions as people decide to get rid of them. What I've done with my desk, and I had used the drawing board and animated on my desk for many, many years, I actually laid the drawing board flat, and I have my computer on it now, and that's where I do all my writing.
What do you want people to take away from your book?
Well, I think one of the things that I want people to understand is that period of time and the philosophy that went into, you know, if people are interested in Disney history and animation history, there was this philosophy that, you know, create the right tools for each discipline within the animation process and you create efficiencies, and they didn't take anything for granted. One of the interesting things about Disney was that he took the time to look at every little detail, and that's really almost the foundation of the company. Their success is in the details and taking everything to the nth degree of quality and presentation. The simple notion of a desk is not just a desk, it's actually the foundation to create great art off of. And so each discipline had certain requirements that were designed into their particular desk.
After the break, I'll continue my conversation with author and animator David Bossert. You're listening to Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with author David Bossert. His newest book is Cam Weber, mid-century furniture designs for the Disney Studios.
You know, I'm going to sidestep for a little bit, but still talking about your book. And in your book, you mentioned that you have caricatures of you that were created by John Musker, who is an animator with Little Mermaid, Aladdin, Hercules, and so many more. How cool is that?
Oh, I know. Yeah, and I interviewed John about working on the director's desk, because he actually started out as an animator, but he directed. He was one of the directors on The Little Mermaid. He was one of the directors on Aladdin and on Hercules. So, you know, he had been there for, I think, a decade longer than I had before he left. You know, being able to chat with some of these guys, and I, you know, I've known them for so many years, so it was a very relaxed conversation, and we had some laughs, and we reminisced. To hear each one's perspective on their particular desk was just fascinating.
I'm speaking with David Bossert. His newest book is Kim Weber, Mid-Century Furniture Design for the Walt Disney Studio. We're also talking about his career and some of his Disney stuff that he has. And so you also noted in the book, and I thought this was quite interesting, that people love Disney, old Disney, new Disney. They love Disney stuff. And if you can retell the story about the envelopes that the paychecks used to come in.
Yes. Yeah, you know, years ago when we got paper checks, you know, well before direct deposit, we would get, you know, every week our paycheck in an envelope, and on the outside of the envelope, they would print the logo for whatever the latest movie was, or some anniversary, or a new attraction at the park. People saved those envelopes because they had something cool printed on them. And it turned out people wanted to buy those things. And some of the folks at the studio would sell those at Disney conventions. It's the darndest thing. When I was packing up my office, anything I had that was Disney related, you had to just stop and pause for a second and go, maybe somebody would want this someday. I don't know. You know?
Of course you would ask yourself that. How could you not? Who were Walt's nine men?
Well, Walt's Nine Old Men, it was sort of a tongue-in-cheek thing that happened because they referred to the Supreme Court back then as the Nine Old Men on the Supreme Court.
Oh.
And there was a joke made at the studio. Walt had his nine old men, and they were his top animators, and that just kind of stuck. I mean, there were a lot of other great animators and whatnot, but there were these nine guys that had worked there for decades who just were dubbed the Nine Old Men.
Hmm. How did animation change from early Walt Disney days to your time drawing to today?
Well, you know, it's interesting. That's a great question, Lillian. If you look at the more than 90 years Mickey Mouse made his debut in November of 1928, and if you look at the animation that Walt was doing in the 1920s, he was constantly pushing the envelope of making animation an art form. If you look from 1928 to 1937, when he creates Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, the art form transformed just unbelievable amount. It made huge leaps during the 1930s, and it was all towards Walt creating that first animated feature film. That idea that they were constantly pushing forward on the cutting edge of technology, on the cutting edge of the art form, that was sort of the underlying principle of all the films they were doing over the decades. And that hasn't stopped today. When you look at the films that are being done, like Frozen and Wreck-It Ralph Breaks the Internet, the artists that are working on these films today are continuing to build on the shoulders of all of these giants of the past.
But the techniques and the style, obviously the technology has changed.
Absolutely, and the technology was always changing and evolving even during Walt's time, with the introduction of the multiplane camera and the introduction of xerography and the introduction of computer animation. And the one underlying principle that's constant in all of that is the basic principles of animation that are applied whether you're doing hand-drawn animation, stop-motion animation, or computer-generated animation of today. They still rely on those basic principles of animation.
Oh, okay. So I know this is not going to be a fair question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Because, you know, when you love your children, you love all your children, and there is no favorite, and we know that. What film for you, either maybe not a favorite, but inspired something or brought something or meant something to you because of what was going on in your world? What film did you work on that is your pride?
You said it right there. It's so difficult to say, of all these movies I worked on, this is my most favorite one. I can never really do that. And the real simple reason is that every film I worked on was a learning experience. Mm-hmm. I learned something new. I did something new. There were difficulties that we had to surmount. I have fond memories of all the movies I've worked on. But having said that, one does bubble up above it, and for different reasons, and that is Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Really?
And the reason for that is that I got an opportunity to live in London to work on that movie, and it was a very international crew of artists that worked on that film. We worked under the great animation legend, Richard Williams, who directed the animation, and of course Bob Zemeckis directed the live action of the film. Because of that movie, I have friends all over the world. And I made some great friendships. I really look at that film very fondly because of the friendships I made.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you had an answer to that. Thank you for that. And now your next project. What is it?
Well, I have my book on the making of Tim Burton's Nightmare Before Christmas. That's coming out in June. And then I'm also working on a 3D Disneyland book. I have my Lifetime Silver Pass. I still have my studio ID because, you know, I'm classified as retired. I shifted gears. Almost hard to explain to people sometimes, you know, having worked someplace for so long, I didn't just walk away from it. Right. I just shifted gears into doing something different, where now I'm telling stories about things that I had worked on in the past.
Oh, that's great.
Look at it as documenting it. You know, my Kem Weber book is a historical document of this furniture because there's no other book out there that does it.
Very good. David, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure getting to ask you so many questions about Disney and about your book.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate you having me on your show. And thanks very much for talking about the book.
David Bossert is a longtime animator and now author. His current book is Ken Weber, Mid-Century Furniture Designs for the Disney Studios. He has a new book scheduled to hit the stands this summer. When you talk with David, you quickly learn what a nice guy he is and that he has friends in high places.
You'll reach the office of Dave Bossert. He's not here, but I bet if you leave your name, number, and a brief message, he can call you back. Because that's just the kind of guy he is.
To learn more about David and all his work, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on the link for today's show. That's our show. To hear any past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. If you have a suggestion for a segment or a topic, leave me a message. Thanks to all who helped to make the show possible, including David Fleming, Sharina Wadd, Sean Houlihan, and executive producer Rick Dulock. Ethan Bortnick provides our theme music. Join me next week at the same time for Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez. Bye for now.